Welcome back, everyone, to a fabulous new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited to be welcoming back an incredible artist that we got to speak to last year. Joining us today, we have the amazing choreographer, Jody Sperling, who's joining us today to talk about her upcoming production being presented by the New York Society for Ethical Culture and Jody Sperling Time Lapse Dance Company. And the show, of course, is called Sound Earth Motion. It's happening Saturday, June 1st at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, Adler Hall. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting timelapsedance.com. We had such a great time speaking with Jody last year about the amazing work that her company, Time Lapse Dance, does. And so with that, let's welcome back our guest, Jody. Hey, welcome back to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. It's a pleasure to, you know, continue this conversation with you.
I'm so happy you're back. And I love that we are picking up where we left off. But with this new piece, Sound Earth Motion, can we start by having you tell us a little bit about what this show is about?
Absolutely. So I have been really lucky to be the eco artist in residence for the New York Society for Ethical Culture for, you know, since 2022. And it's an ongoing collaboration that we have that has been giving me a home to really focus on what does it mean to, you know, make dances ethically. And then also the focus of my work is about ecology. So I'm making works that are about, you know, human connection with nature. And I'm trying to do them in a way that's, you know, sustaining to me and to the dancers and all the collaborators in a way where we respect and honor each other and provide an experience for the audience that helps deepen their sense of embodiment and connection to their own natural being. And, you know, I think one of the root causes when we talk about climate change is that we think that we're somehow not part of nature. Like, we think that, you know, nature exists out there. So if we damage it or hurt it, it doesn't really affect us. But that's such a flawed way of thinking about things, because we are just all part of the same, you know, big planet, tiny planet, right? And everything that anyone does on this planet affects everything that anyone else thinks or does on this little, you know, orb. And so, you know, our dance production, Sound Earth Motion, sort of features works that are all around this kind of interconnection that we have with one another, that we have with all the living ecosystems. And even we have a piece on the program that's sort of about kind of our lunar planetary connection. So that's the kind of like general thing. But then what would you actually see if you come to the show? And so I'll tell you, so the concert features, it's a combination of, you know, live music and live dance. And we have a very special way of dancing and moving. And it's inspired by an historical dance figure called Louis Fuller, who danced over about 100 years ago with enormous silk costumes created from hundreds of yards of silk. And she would spin them into spiraling sculptural forms. And she was very celebrated, you know, back in the 1890s, through the 1920s. And then she went through a period where people didn't really know that she had existed, but she was very influential. And so what I do in my work is I take this genre that she created and set it into dialogue with the natural world. And so what's so cool about these enormous costumes that we wear and adapt for modern times is that they expand our body into space and they amplify our movement. And they're just incredible at conjuring natural forces. So the first piece on the program is called Windrose. And in Windrose, what we're visualizing and also sonifying, and I even think of kineticizing, like putting into human motion, shifting atmospheric conditions. So with climate change, one of the things that's really, you know, interesting, I'll say interesting, is that, you know, as the planet heats up, things become more turbulent. The wind patterns become less predictable and they become more chaotic. And so we're exploring this as a choreographic idea. And we have these enormous white costumes that help us as humans embody what it feels like to be part of the atmosphere. And one of the things that's very cool about those costumes is that if you move them in a certain way, they actually move the air around. And in doing that, they make sound. So when I kind of do a spin with the whoosh, with the costume, it makes this kind of slicing, slapping sound in the air. And so what we've done in this piece, Windrose, is actually compose the motion and the sound and with the costuming to create a kind of fugue of atmospheric disturbance that you will literally feel if you come to Ethical Culture on June 1st. You'll actually feel like the wind patterns that we create on stage. They will, like, the breeze will slap you in the face and you'll have a kind of full sensory experience. You'll see it, you'll feel it, and then you can kind of like identify with the motion of the dancers, but then you'll feel the wind that they generate as well. So it's kind of this multi-level sensory experience of this kind of increasing turbulence in the atmosphere. So that's one of my favorite pieces. We've done that before, but in terms of this program, I love doing that. And then the music is, I have this ongoing collaboration with composer Matthew Bertner. He's an incredible sort of environmental composer and he uses material and data from climate in his work. And anyway, so he does the music and he has a fan that he plays with a feather. It's very cool what he does. And then he amplifies our sounds that we're making, including the dancers' vocalizations, and I chime in with some breath. So that is Windrose. That's part of that's the sort of the gust of breeze that opens the program of sound, earth, ocean. And I feel also like that when you know the name of this podcast, Stage Whisper, we do sort of whisper in it. There's a whispering breath. And I think that the reason we vocalize is also this sense of a lot of the work, or this idea that I talked about connecting nature and human, is that we think that there's this like boundary around our skin and that we, you know, are these discrete objects. But you got to think about like breath. Where does your breath begin and the atmosphere end, and vice versa? And so there's this slippage, like we actually can sort of think of our breath like mingling with the air around us, and the air around us like is continuous with atmosphere. And so there's this constant exchange between, you know, the air that comes in us, the air that goes out of us. Of course, we realized that during COVID pretty well when we saw how quickly like aerosol particles like circulated over the globe. But there's a positive lesson in that as well, which is we can all negative impact each other by spreading harmful viral, you know, aerosols, but we also can like positively impact each other, because with positive impacts, they ripple and radiate outward globally. So that's Windrose. And then I'm pretty excited to be reviving one of my signature solos that I literally have not performed for 10 years on the stage, and it's called Clair de Lune. And it has always been everyone's favorite piece. It's the piece that I get asked to perform the most, and I got so sick of it like about 10 years ago. I was like, let me take a break. But now I'm bringing it back for this special occasion. And it's everybody's favorite tune, Debussy, Moonlight, or Clair de Lune. And we'll have a live pianist, Jeffrey Middleton, who did the original music for me many years ago, will do this. And it's just an evocation of, you know, a shimmering moonlit sky in a Loie Fuller style costume that's quite expansive. My wingspan is more than 15 feet. And yeah. And I am also thinking of bringing this, the reason we're bringing this piece back is in honor of the recent eclipse And I think everybody had such a beautiful experience watching the eclipse and feeling like this was a momentous occasion. And sort of really, we don't have very many moments in our, you know, daily city lives where we really stop and recognize our place in the solar system. And so that was just a moment where we all got to sort of, oh yeah, we're on this, you know, orb that's circling the sun, and there's this other orb that circles around us, and here we are watching that. And I think, you know, this piece is just a kind of memory of and an evocation of that experience. And then lastly, and this is the real centerpiece of the program, is our work Arbor. And this is the piece that I'm really proud of. And it's the piece that we have been working on through the residency at Ethical Culture. It's what brought us in there, and it's what we sort of birthed while we were there. And it's Arbor, and it's about human relationships with trees. And it started with me doing a deep pandemic dive reading about trees. And I think that what's incredible is people now realize that trees communicate with one another. There are these underground root systems and mycorrhizal fungi that connect the roots of trees to one another, and the trees send signals to each other underground, and they call this the wood wide web. So it's like a neural network underground, right? And so what people or scientists have been realizing about trees, and this is through the work of Suzanne Simard, a tree ecologist a Canadian tree ecologist who's done this groundbreaking research and has written an amazing book about her life and her work in this field, is that you can't really draw an edge around where a tree begins and ends, because the mycorrhizal fungi and the bacteria that are on the root tips actually help sustain the tree, but they also help, you know, bring nutrients to the tree, you know, to the tree, but also the trees can share nutrients. They can share water. They can share they can share information. They literally can warn each other about danger from pests. And so there's this question, like, well, if they can do that, like, isn't that what consciousness is about? Isn't that what intelligence is? And so there's this sense of, okay, one tree is not a single entity. It's a multi-species collaboration. And also a forest is really like a super organism, because all the organisms are working together, right? And you know, these trees are sort of, you could look at them as one larger being, maybe potentially even an intelligent being. That's a question that's being raised by this idea of the wood wide web. But you can say the same thing for people. We have this very strong sense of individuality, especially as United States, you know, residents, right? That, you know, we have individual rights, we have individual property rights, but then there's this question of actually one human is comprised of like trillions of organisms, right? Like we have in our gut, you know, trillions of bacteria. They're sort of not us, right? But we sort of need them to live. And so it's really hard to, like, there's been sort of an idea in biology that the idea of like a singular I or ego I, like we all should be using the royal we all the time. Like we feel this and we feel that and we are hungry, because it's really not just what you think your brain cells, right, which maybe are you, that are hungry, but it's also like the trillions of gut bacteria that are like, feed us, you know. So this idea of like one organism being both a singular and a sort of collective being is really the genesis of this piece, Arbor. That's like a very long, like scientific kind of foray into how this got started. But what you'll actually see is what we're interested in sort of representing on stage are elements of tree life, right? So there's this one section that we call trunk, but where the dance, there's three dancers and they're embracing each other and their limbs are completely entwined. And it sort of models this interconnectedness. So you'll see their fingers and toes like articulating the way they might if we're, you know, we were trying to get a kind of rootiness. Like if you're trying to be a tree, like you have to imagine that you have more possibilities for articulating than just, you know, like your 10 fingers and 10 toes and two arms and two legs. And so they just entwine and create a kind of single kind of entity that's completely, you know, you can't sort of, they're entangled, right? It's like a bit of an entangled life. So that's like one component. And there's another section of Arbor, we call it Mother Tree. And there's a dancer who has Loie Fuller style cape. It's an enormous white costume, but on the cape is painted tree limbs. And they're painted in the style of American elm. And American elm, as many of your listeners will know, is, you know, an endangered tree that was sort of blighted, but there's a surviving stand of American elm very close to the venue, like right across the street from, you know, Society of Ethical Culture on Central Park West. There are American elms, and the oldest surviving like stand of elm trees is in Central Park, like right there. So that was sort of our inspiration, is like thinking about our local trees. And so the dancer in this like elm costume has another dancer inside the costume that you can't see. And as the piece develops, it starts to become a duet where you see the kind of the hidden body starting to emerge. And it's really kind of a parallel between kind of human reproduction and birth, right? But also this idea of like, how is it like when you have things that are entwined, and like, what is the process of growth? And what is this process of rooting and spreading and, you know, being responsible for kind of, you know, proliferating life? And then the piece like has other kind of sections, and the finale is really, we call it where three dancers in these incredible elm costumes go through the kind of sequence of furling and unfurling as if they are kind of, it's almost like, you know, I call my company Time Lapse Dance, which is, you know, and a time lapse is a kind of film technique where you see the, you know, something speeded up, right? You can see a flower blooming all at once. And so in this piece, you have a sense of the time lapse of tree growth, like as if you're seeing the life of a tree and that tree living in a sort of, in a world where time is speeding up. And so it's like the trees start off kind of moving and branching in sort of slow motion. And then they go through this like sequence of actions and the world, and they must respond more quickly, because that's what climate change is about. It's about this place where all of the changes are happening more rapidly. And so the, you know, humans are pretty adaptable, but a lot of the life on this planet is not used to having to like evolve or migrate so quickly. And also trees cannot like just pick up and walk, but they are migrating in response to climate. So, the last thing I'm just going to say about Arbor, which is that the music is out of this world. It is incredible. It's by Matthew Bertner. And what he's done that's, you know, different than our scores that we've, you know, done before is this score combines not just him playing electronics and different kinds of some of the crazy instruments that he fashions, and also using like some of the music is field recordings from what we did a residency together in Alaska last year. And he recorded me kind of dancing in and moving branches in a tree. And he was like, I was on the top of the tree and he was in the bottom of the tree, like recording the sounds that I was making as I moved the tree. Gently, no, the tree was not hurt. And so like he uses some of that data, but we also have these special guests from the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra who are coming, and it's a string trio, and they're going to play on their beautiful wooden instruments the melodic components of the score along with recorded and electronic things. So it's a very rich sensory evening.
That sounds amazing. Amazing. Wow.
I really couldn't be prouder. I have to say, I feel like I have, you know, like when you do what you do over and over and over again as an artist, right? And sometimes you hit and sometimes you miss. And this program is our hits, you know, like it's our hits. And it's just going to be a lovely evening. You know, I'm very proud, and I'm proud of my beautiful dancers and collaborators and the musicians. So, it's just, you think it takes, it's surprising sometimes to remind yourself how many people are involved with the production when you actually, you know, even if it's not like a Broadway show with 40 people on stage, or, you know, it's a ton of people put a ton of work into this show.
Yes, it sounds it. That sounds impressive and absolutely amazing. And I think we talked about Arbor. That was the show we spoke about last year.
Yeah.
Describing it, I was like, wait a minute, I remember some of this. So that is so cool that it's having another performance here coming up. So with these great pieces and the great work that your company does, what is the message or thought that you are hoping the audiences will take away from this upcoming performance?
That's such a, you know, good idea. Well, good question to ask. And I think a lot about how art is related to climate and how it can help shift people's thinking around climate. And I've kind of created, I don't want to say like a theory, but or framework for thinking about the different pathways into what dance or what performance can do to help activate people toward climate action. And it's one of the things that we do is the basic level, which is creating awareness. And, you know, that we're talking about these issues, that we're normalized talking about them, that's baseline. But then beyond that, I think this idea of creating empathy for something that's more than human. As humans, we've talked about how we're not separate from nature, but I think that we also tend to only care about our kin. And we have to have a more expansive sense of caring for other creatures. So caring for trees. I really do hope that this awakens a kind of empathy or a caring for trees. And in wherever you live, that sense of caring for trees is something that you can put into immediate action. And there's so many organizations in New York, like Trees New York, or I Dig to Learn, or I Love Your Street Tree Day, which are organizations that we partner with on events, where you can sort of put this like empathy into action. Another level that we hope this, on which we hope this piece operates, is this idea of modeling interconnectedness. So this is something that's really important and not often articulated, but when you feel isolated, you don't feel like you can act. And breaking down that sense of isolation is really important to helping people understand their power. And it could be political power, it could be community power. But so modeling this entanglement of limbs is one way of it's one way of showing you, wait, you are connected with other people, you know, in ways that you might not even imagine. So in a performance is a little bit like a ritual experience. And, you know, people talk a lot about theater as ritual, and a lot, you know, the whole field of performance studies, it sort of comes out a little bit of anthropology, you know, with this sort of idea of ritual as performance, performance as ritual. And when I say that, what am I talking about in this context? Ritual is a way that we have an experience where we allow ourselves to be changed. And I think that's because it's a, you know, there's the ritual, the repeated thing of going to the theater, sitting in the darkened auditorium, right? Like that's a ritual. But we have this experience where we are allowing ourselves to be changed. And that's what makes it different than you know, you go and see a presentation. It's not a ritual, right? And so in what we really need for us to have the transformation, the very rapid transformation that we need in our society that's more sustainable, more equitable, more just, like what we need is for people to change how they are thinking. And so how can they change how they are thinking? They need to be open to changing how they are thinking. And so a performance like this, we think of it as a ritual experience to allow the space to transform how they are thinking and to understand, you know, we talked about this, to understand their interconnection with other beings, to have space to articulate that with one another, to experience it. And then the sort of, I think, one of the most important things that performance can do is to facilitate community building. And so we do that by, in our programming, by bringing, literally by bringing people into the theater together, but also providing opportunities for conversation and also for bringing different communities together in the same place. So we will, for instance, the New York Society for Ethical Culture, or as we sometimes say, Ethical NYC, is on 64th and Central Park West. So a very short physical distance away on the other side of Lincoln Center is the Amsterdam Houses, which is also on 64th Street and Amsterdam, between Amsterdam and West End Avenue. And that is a very different socioeconomic location in terms of the residents and levels of privilege. And so one of the things that Ethical NYC has been doing is reaching out to residents of the Amsterdam Houses to provide services, very much needed services. And we have Time-Lapse Dance as the, you know, eco artist in residence has been also bringing services to the residents there at NYCHA Houses. But we are also welcoming in the residents of NYCHA Houses to the programming and ethical culture as a way of fostering community building and, you know, and cross community networking and building. So that's what we hope we can accomplish with these performances. And, you know, it's an ongoing conversation. It takes a lot of work and dialogue to find these pathways and to keep them growing and changing, and also to keep, you know, questioning and reevaluating and forging, you know, new ways of creating impacts.
That is also wonderful. These are brilliant thoughts. I love all this. And I want to build on this to my final question of this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to sound and earth and motion?
So we welcome all New Yorkers to the program. The program is twofold. So there's a performance, and then after the performance, there's also a gala reception. And so the performance is very affordably priced. And so we hope that it is welcoming to all New Yorkers. You know, the tickets are, you know, $20 for seniors and students and Ethical NYC members, and $25 for the general public. And it's a large house. We hope you can all come. If you have the means to support Time-Lapse Dance and this work further, we would invite you to come to our gala and share a glass of sparkling wine and share some sparkling conversation with us and, you know, help us in our mission of bringing this work to more places and more people and to creating work in an ethical way where we can continue to pay the dancers for their labor and their creative contributions. We also, if there are folks who really want to be part of this work and, you know, would like to participate in ways beyond attending, we welcome the more the merrier jumping on board the Time-Lapse Dance bandwagon And if you'd like to, you know, attend, and the ticket price seems unattainable, we always need volunteers for front of house and for other things. And so we welcome you to reach out to us through the website as well. So there are many ways to connect and the work with us. And we have a lot of, we also do, I'm going to say this is really interesting space we're in right now, because for the past year, we have been offering all of our programming for free. And that has been really incredible, because we've been able, we've had a lot of funding support, and we've been able to do that. And we've been able to, you know, make the programs at Ethical for free. And we've done a lot of outdoor programming as well. And we are continuing to do a lot of free outdoor programming. But in the interest of sustainability for the organization, we are charging, you know, selling tickets for this program. But we believe that they're, you know, in the affordable range. And, you know, we hope that people will still be able to, you know, come from all walks of life and all parts of the city to come and enjoy this special evening.
For the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. And I know we're a little short on time, but I can't let you go without asking my favorite question, which of course is, what is your favorite theater memory? Or since we have had you on before, what's another of your favorite theater memories?
My gosh, I can't remember, like, I had to like think if I like said the same thing. Like, what if I said the same thing? I do love. Oh, I know. Okay, so I just, you know, it's so hard when you have to pick like your one or favorite memory. But one of the things that I love is when art forms integrate, you know, music and dance and, you know, drama and narrative and theatrical experience. And I think in my work that I try to, you know, the thing that I love about choreography is it does all that, right? But before the pandemic, I think one of the theatrical experiences that I had that just like has stuck with me through that, it was like a live experience. It's like one of the last shows that I went to, like before the pandemic. And it kind of like the liveness of it really stayed with me through the pandemic, was at the Met Opera. They did a production of Octonin, which is this Philip Glass opera. And it was just like unbelievable. The kind of thing where you just have like shivers from the like resonance of the frequency of the music. And the thing that was so cool about the choreography was the Gandini jugglers choreographed this juggling as part of this Egyptian story. And so the way they, the inventiveness with how they, and the sort of virtuosity of how they integrated, you know, juggling seamlessly into this operatic production, it was really incredible. And actually there's another scene in the Octana where there's a sun. And basically, you know, Octonin is like worship, you know, it's about sort of like worshiping the singularity of, you know, rather of going from like polytheism to monotheism. And so the sun is like the stand-in for like, you know, a singular god. And the way that the sun is illuminated on stage is just glows. And of course, I'm, you know, love light. Like Chloe Fuller was, who I talked about earlier, was a pioneer of lighting design and developed all these, you know, incredible effects with light. And the simplicity of that just glowing orb and the music and the, it's just like visually just blew your mind away. And they, I had a chance to sort of, you know, there was a film of it that, you know, the Met Opera, and it was broadcast on TV during the pandemic. But I remember just, wow, the visual of that. It really, and with the sound, obviously it's nothing without the music, but just like the collaboration between sound and music and story and lighting and design, when it all works in harmony, it just transports you to another dimension and era, you know. So there, I was like, I remember something that was really, really great.
I love that. That is such an amazing memory.
Did you see Octonin, or have you
seen... No, but I'm just listening to you talk about it. I'm like, I need to find a way to see this because that just sounds amazing.
Thank you so much
for sharing that. That's incredible. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you or your company have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline we might be able to plug for you?
We have a lot in the works, but nothing that I can really publicize just yet. So I'm going to say to to everyone out there, please go to our website and sign up for our mailing list so we can keep you posted, because we have some big news for the fall, but I can't tell you just yet. So stay tuned.
I love that. And that is a great lead into my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Sound Earth Motion or about you or your company, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So the best way to reach us is on the website, timelapsedance.com. And if you go to the events page, you can see all the information about Sound Earth Motion. You can, email us through the webpage, but you can also follow us on Instagram. We have a pretty active feed, and that's my name, Jody_Sperling on Instagram.
Wonderful. Well, Jody, thank you so much for joining us once again and for bringing this amazing show that you've got going on. I'm so excited about it. I truly hope that my schedule allows me to see this, because everything, especially Arbor, sounds amazing. I got to see all of this.
Beautiful. I hope you can make it. We'll save you a seat, okay? We'll see you there.
Yes. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been lovely.
Thank you. Pleasure speaking with you today.
My guest today has been the amazing choreographer Jody Sperling, who joined us to talk about the New York Society for Ethical Culture and Jody Sperling and Time Lapse Dance's presentation of Sound Earth Motion. It's happening Saturday, June 1st at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, Adler Hall. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting timelapsedance.com. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But come out and join us for this incredible piece of art, this beautiful, beautiful dance pieces, I should say. Again, the show is Sound Earth Motion, happening Saturday, June 1st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.